Radio City Talk.
The A to Z of Merseyside football.
Time for our weekly trip through the A to Z of Merseyside football. It's just a wonderful feature. John Keith brings it to us each and every week. So some famous matches, names, goals, all sorts in there. And we're on the letter H at the moment. Morning to you, John.
Good morning, Steve. Still on the H's and more to come. But we're talking, first of all, today about Adrian Heath. Now, excuse me, perhaps the greatest yardstick of Heath's talent is provided by Graham Sharp. Sharp had 12 different attack partners during 11 years at Everton, including Andy Gray and Gary Lineker, yet singled out Heath as his favourite. Adrian Paul Heath, nicknamed Inchy at Goodison because of its 5'6" height, was born in Newcastle under Lyme in January 1961, and after joining Stoke as an apprentice in 1977, signed pro in January 1979, aged 17. Now, his development in the reserves at Stoke was guided by player coach Howard Kendall, for whom he acted as boot boy. During his first season as Everton manager, Kendall spent a club record £750,000 in January 1982 to sign Heath, 4 days before his 21st birthday, and by then an England under 21 international. Heath hit 11 goals in his first full season, but in 1983-84, one of the landmark campaigns in Everton history, he was top scorer with 18 goals, one of them hugely significant to the futures of both Kendall and the club. It came on a freezing January night in 1984 in the League Cup quarter-final at 3rd Division Oxford United's Manor Ground. Everton had gone into the new year after negotiating Goodison's infamous winter of discontent, when fans distributed flyers calling for Kendall and chairman Philip Carter to go, as the club languished in or just above the relegation places. It led to Carter publicly issuing a genuine vote of confidence in Kendall, who responded to Everton problems with what proved to be three inspired decisions: promoting Colin Harvey to become his right-hand man, recalling Peter Reid to the first team, and gambling by signing a less-than-fit Andy Gray. But at Oxford, the potential embarrassment and repercussions of being beaten were massive, and with 8 minutes left, Everton were trailing 1-0. Heath takes up the story. Kevin Brock had possession, and as he turned towards Oxford goal, with Peter Reid pressuring him, I sneaked behind Malcolm Shotton. I was hoping Brock wouldn't see me, and that he'd assume it was safe to knock it back to his goalkeeper, Steve Hardwick. Sure enough, the back pass came, I slipped out from behind the defender, nicked the ball and rounded the keeper. It wasn't easy because the pitch was bone hard and the angle tight, but my shot went in by the near post. I was pleased with the finish, but the important thing was the effect on the team. Wherever I go, I seem to be remembered for that goal. They don't mention any of the other 93 I scored for Everton. They believe that goal saved Howard's job, and there certainly was speculation that he was out if we lost. Heath's strike did far more than earn Everton a replay, which they won 4-1. It galvanised the entire club and was the catalyst for a 31-match run to the end of the season, of which they lost only five. In the process, they won the FA Cup by beating Watford at Wembley, Heath heading the extra-time semi-final winner against Southampton, reached the League Cup final, which they lost to Liverpool in a main road replay, and then finished seventh in the top flight. Heath's path, through the following season of 1984-85, the most successful in Everton history, was prematurely ended in December by a horror tackle from Sheffield Wednesday's Brian Marwood. Heath had been excelling in the role between striker and midfielder. At the time was the country's top league scorer with 11 goals from 17 games and on the brink of a full England call-up. He suffered massive knee damage to both the cruciate and medial ligaments and cartilage, ruling him out of the rest of Everton's journey to the league title, the European Cup Winners' Cup and a losing FA Cup final against Manchester United. The surgeon told me and the club to expect the worst because it was virtually a knee reconstruction, Heath revealed. The hardest part was missing out on the European semi-final against Bayern Munich, which was possibly Goodison's greatest ever night. But Heath swallowed his bitter disappointment, regained full fitness and went on to play a further 300 career games for his various clubs. The following season of 1985-86, despite the high-profile club record £800,000 arrival of Gary Lineker from Leicester, Heath scored 15 times as Everton finished runners-up to Liverpool in both league and cup. But a year later, after Lineker had made a £2.2 million move to Barcelona, Heath was collecting his second league title medal, Everton reversing positions with Liverpool from the previous season prior to Kendall's departure to Athletic Bilbao. Heath spent one season under Colin Harvey's management, scoring 9 times as Everton finished 4th, prior to joining Espanyol in the summer of 1988, his Goodison career statistics reading 94 goals in 308 appearances. He went on to play for Aston Villa, Manchester City, where he rejoined Kendall, Stoke City, Burnley and Sheffield United, the latter two clubs later appointing him manager, and he was twice caretaker boss of Coventry City. And for more than a decade, he's been managing in the United States, taking charge of Austin Aztecs, Orlando City, and currently Minnesota United. For a spell during the 1990s, Heath acted as Kendall's number two back at Everton, a club he says will always be in his blood. Goodison's a special place, and when it's bouncing, there's no better atmosphere, he declared. I know they've to maximise revenue by moving to a new stadium, but it will be a sad day when they play there for the last time. So that's Adrian Heath, Steve.
Clearly hugely important. I mean, his honours list pays tribute to that. A couple of league championships, of course, FA Cup winner as well. And you talked about the Cup Winners' Cup and maybe that little bit of a disappointment there then in the final.
For him, yes. Yeah. Missing out on all. Yeah, exactly. And the one and only, of course, European trophy. And for sure he would have been involved had he been fit. Strangely enough, Adrian did reveal that despite that awful tackle by Brian Marwood, they later became very good friends.
Really?
Yes.
What sort of person is he? Did you mix with him a lot?
Brian
him
Marwood?
A lot? No,
yeah.
Adrian.
Oh, Adrian, yeah. Oh, great guy. Very bouncy, very chirpy. And he was on our... We had him on the line on our Strictly John Keith show from America. A great guy and a very good player, Steve.
Clearly has settled across the pond. Let's go from Heath to Harrop.
Yes, well, when Liverpool's legendary Scottish centre-half Alex Raisbeck left to join Partick Thistle in June 1909, it was opportunity for James Harrop to show his defensive credentials in the wake of the great man's departure. Harrop was a farmer's son born in Healy, Sheffield in 1884, and after playing for local clubs, signed pro as a forward for Sheffield Wednesday in 1904, but struggled to make an impact. He moved to Denbigh United and then Rotherham Town, where he was switched to centre-half and made captain. And it was while he was playing for Rotherham in the Midland League that a Liverpool director, who was there to watch another player, was impressed by Harrop, who was soon Anfield-bound, signing for £250 in January 1908, the month he made his debut in Raisbeck's absence in a 1-0 home win over Bolton. The following season, with Raisbeck no longer a regular, Harrop played in 31 of Liverpool's 40 games, and after Raisbeck's return to Scotland, made the number 5 jersey his own and was a key figure in Liverpool finished runners-up to Aston Villa in 1909-10. Harrop, also a keen cricketer and angler, was hailed by the Sunday Chronicle, who enthused, "Who would ever have thought that the legitimate successor to Raisbeck would be found at the first attempt? Harrop has followed the great Scot with such felicitous feet and harmonious heading that he is building a lasting reputation." Harrop and his close friend, the great goalkeeper Sam Hardy, left Liverpool for Aston Villa in summer 1912 in a joint £600 deal, Harrop having made 139 appearances, and the pair won the FA Cup in their first season, beating Sunderland 1-0 in the final. During the First World War, Harrop worked in the manufacture of agricultural implements, and when peace resumed, played for Sheffield United, Burton All Saints and Buxton. He retired in April 1924 and died in May 1954 at the age of 70.
Proper lesson. Jimmy Harrop and Adrian Heath. And as you said before, there's still more H's to come.
Yes, there are more.
Who
H's
have we not
come.
Done yet?
We are diminishing. We have Andy Hinchcliffe, Tony Hibbert.
Oh, they're good.
And we also,
in,
Steve, sadly have to talk about Hillsborough and Heysel.
OK, that's all on the way in the weeks to come. It's Radio City Talk, and it's the A to Z of Merseyside football with John Cooper.
Radio City Talk. The A to Z of Merseyside football.